guys, welcome to back to No Flicks Given, the podcast that we don't have a catchphrase for, so we're just going to leave that blank for now. I'm Frank, joined by Matt, Peter, and Connor. How are all of you guys doing? It's great to see you again.
Hello, internet, and hello, friends.
Good. I'd like to propose a catchphrase for us.
Oh boy.
It's dangerous.
Welcome back to No Flicks Given, where we give all the flicks.
The boom ball. We
have to get those buttons away from Connor. I don't know how to stop that from being in the episode. We're not editing those in. That's what he plays while we're recording. So let's go over it, because this is episode 4 of our new podcast we've just jumped off the cliff with. I've done a movie, Peter's done a movie, Connor's done a movie, and we're down to the last but not least of the four, the Mount Rushmore of the No Flicks Given crew, Matt Conrad. So Matt, I actually don't know what you picked for us to watch.
And, I haven't told anybody.
So the floor is yours.
So yeah, I last time we talked about trying not to regularly inflict movies on each other. So
if it's Cube 2, I swear to fucking God,
no, Star Trek 3. So I think that entered my decision. But then I was also thinking about even as we're recording this, the weather's getting warmer, and I'm kind of done with winter, and certain restrictions are kind of lightening up, and I'm kind of getting a little bit excited to go out and adventure and things. And I wanted to have us revisit a movie that I haven't seen in a long time, but I am curious about revisiting, which is 1988's The Great Outdoors, starring John Candy and Dan Aykroyd.
Dude. Yes. This is one of my favorites. I can't believe we're doing this.
Written by John Hughes.
I haven't seen The Great Outdoors in decades. Yes.
It's written by John Hughes? I didn't even know that.
Yep, written by John Hughes.
I haven't seen it in like 10 years.
I have actually never seen this movie.
Oh, that's cool.
I mean, I haven't seen it in a long time. This was a movie when there were still mom and pop video stores. We rented it, and then the video store closed down, so we just had the VHS tape. So that was one of the movies that we just had to watch all of the time.
Let me also say, potentially the exact opposite of Cube in every conceivable facet.
Yeah, I thought maybe a good palate cleanser.
It's literally outdoors.
Yeah, no,
true.
Yeah.
There is so much sun and sky in this movie compared to Cube.
It's outdoors, and it's great.
Yeah. Well, we're hoping it will be.
This is going to be fun.
If anybody wants to watch it before we get into the meat and potatoes of it, you can rent it on Amazon, or if you have a Starz subscription, you can watch it, stream it for the cost of your subscription, or iTunes even. So if you don't want to get somehow spoiled by a 34-year-old movie, you know, take the opportunity to pause now and go and see it.
All right, Matt, pop the tape in.
All right,
let's get this over with.
Let's roll.
Take out the papers and the trash, or you don't get no spending cash. If you don't scrub that kitchen floor, you ain't gonna rock and roll no more.
Don't talk back.
Just finish cleaning up your room.
We went and have returned from the outdoors. The determination we have yet to make is, were they great?
I'll go out on a limb and say, it was all right.
The all right outdoors.
The all right outdoors, yeah.
Doesn't make for a great movie title, I don't think.
Connor, first impression?
It was a pretty middle of the road 80s family comedy. Which is good. Let me be clear. I think that this formula of movie making is a great way to spend an hour and a half and just completely relax. Like, this is back in the days when we were on Fix It Flick. This is the thing that like I would find on TNT 10 minutes in and just happily just kind of like passively absorb the movie, not even really watch it. You could have swapped this family out with the Griswolds, with, I don't know, pick another 80s movie family.
I can get into it later, but like, was Bill Murray just not available for the Dan Aykroyd part?
I mean, This was
during his period where he wasn't making movies.
Oh, Bill Murray.
Yeah,
oh,
Bill Murray.
Yes.
Bill Murray sort of disappeared for a few years in the 80s. He came back to make Scrooged. So he was like making Scrooged probably around the same time they were making this.
Good Lord. Yeah. And one of John Candy's later works. On the cusp of his later works.
Yeah, it's kind of mid Candy. He passed away in 94.
Four.
Yeah.
So he's still a little ways away from Uncle Buck was the next year. And I think that's sort of like peak Candy. And then I don't even think he had like a real decline movie wise, just sort of a decline health wise.
Yeah, although his last film, what was the Western, was not great. I remember that playing
Wagon East.
Yes, yeah. I remember that playing on Comedy Central a lot. Because
that one I have not seen, so I cannot tell you. Could not tell you.
Yeah. Yeah, this one, this is probably the first time I've seen it in about 20 years. And it feels more like a series of vignettes than like a cohesive tale.
Yeah.
It's almost like a link letter thing of like, here's a week in upstate Wisconsin where these two families have to just deal with each other. And here's a series of things that happen with no major, character arcs or changes, except for maybe the issues that Dan Aykroyd has to work out in like the last 20 minutes of the film.
Yeah, no, that's very much like the John Hughes family comedy formula. I mean, Home Alone is basically the same thing with fewer characters. We're like, it's basically a bunch of vignettes up until the third act adventure, if you will. And Christmas Vacation was what I was what I was thinking of, because it is a lot of like scene begins, you have a whole story arc in the scene ends, move on to next scene that is could be connected, doesn't necessarily have to be connected,
and we never talk about it again.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And usually ends with the father of the family getting hurt in some way.
Yes.
This is the first watching. This was the first time I realized that there was a formula to it.
Yeah,
there's a formula, but I think this one particularly leaves a couple of pieces out that I only noticed this time, where it's like we're not going anywhere.
Yeah.
Like usually there's this like abstract thing that we're working towards. Like it's as stupid as Christmas Vacation is. Like we're working towards Christmas. Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
Like you don't actually need the thing, but like most times, or like Wally World, like I can't not compare this to the Vacation movies, but like this movie actually doesn't have any thing. If the main character is John Candy, he doesn't have a tangible goal, which is like if you've ever taken a screenwriting class, you've gotten yelled at by like for not having something that's just like very clear cut, where it's like this is you achieving it or this is you not. So it's like it was kind of frustrating where it's like, okay, there isn't like the big father-son cookout that is coming up that he needs to, like, there's no thing. It's just scene after scene of them hanging out, which is each scene's pretty good. But like, I noticed that this time that there actually isn't any driving force. I don't know how long they're there for or anything.
Yeah.
And there's no like heart. Like you've got the family all there. There's never that sort of like catharsis of heart, like, or like, poignant moments. This is no 16 Candles, this is no Home Alone for as weird as it is, but by the end it's got that like gooey caramel center. It's not even like Weird Science really, but I think everyone's comparison to the National Lampoon Vacation movies is definitely the most apt here, and for me it fell just kind of flat.
I think it's because it's missing that heart, which is surprising coming from something that's written by John Hughes. It's just you would expect that he wants the core concept of, something to do with family or some theme of whatever it is. But
yeah,
it only really, like it they rush it in the last, act of the film to be like, oh, fuck, we forgot to put this in. And then it's, this whole thing about Dan Aykroyd having to be a father in front of his kids that doesn't really like they've set it up kind of in the scene when he's in the bathroom asking his wife, which, by the way, Annette Bening's first film.
I was shocked by that.
Uh-huh.
She's really good.
Because Annette Bening feels like she's been around forever.
She does feel like literally timeless.
Exactly, yeah. Like in a good way.
Yeah. I had a note that said, Annette Bening is near unrecognizable in a good way.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, this was technically the first Annette Bening film I think I'd ever seen. Just by virtue of the fact that, again, this was a movie that did okay in the box office, but apparently did gangbusters in the home rental market, which makes sense. Because, you pop it in and you just turn it on and you don't have to pay a ton of attention to it. And there are moments in it that will make you laugh. Because even now, there's still stuff in it that I will cackle at, despite the fact that it's a lot less cohesive than I remember it being.
Yeah, I mean, this movie feels like a movie that I would rent on vacation.
Yeah.
You know, especially since I'm currently living in the town that we used to come to on vacation when I was a kid, this definitely feels like going to the local off-brand video rental place and looking for a movie that is generally agreeable to everybody. This would be kind of it.
Well, you see Aykroyd and Candy on the cover and you're like, okay, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
And I have to say that this is probably two notches more raunchy than my family would accept as a family film.
Yeah, but there's some weird atonal raunchy moments.
Yeah.
Just sort of sprinkled throughout the running time of the film. I was like, oh, okay.
And the 16-year-old girl smoking a cigarette.
Yeah, quick. So this is the only fun fact that I want to spit out for this movie. Do you know who that girl is?
I have no idea who that girl is.
That is Roger Deakins' daughter.
No shit.
Holy shit.
Wait, which girl?
The love interest for the teenage boy. Her name is...
Connie is the character's name.
Lucy Deakins, yeah.
Lucy Deakins.
Oh, shit.
Yep.
She's awful.
I thought she was fine.
Your mouth.
Well, yeah. It's not her fault. The love story,
That whole thing should have been excised, yeah.
Dude, I also have to talk about the music at some point where it felt like everything was stock music.
Yes.
And there was no...
Did you see who scored it? Who did the incident? Thomas Newman.
Really?
Oh.
No.
Yes.
I think Thomas Newman did... The only thing I'd believe is if you tell me he did the Western theme at the end with the bear. What was that music?
The bear chase theme. The weirdly orchestral bear chase music. Yeah.
Well, speaking of the romance sequences, thinking on the movie, remembering it, could have sworn that every single one of those scenes was played to The Police, Every Breath You Take, but it was just the store brand version of Every Breath You Take. And it was just like, oh yeah, they just couldn't afford to or did not want to pay for the rights, so poor Thomas Newman had to do the knockoff.
Dude, one other piece that's weird, the scene with John Candy and the older son in the rowboat. I swear to God, I know it's not, but go back and re-listen to it. The music in there, it's very quiet, but it almost sounds like the very quiet Back to the Future theme when they're talking about whenever he wakes up in the from being knocked out and his mom is in the room, it's got that dun, 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 almost note for note. It's really weird.
You and I coming up to the woods is like your father bringing you here.
Yeah, I guess so.
I understand. Thanks for the ring.
One does wonder. That's another scene where it was like, fuck, we forgot to put in some heart in this movie. Put John Candy and the kid in a boat and throw a light on him, and we'll have a good heart-to-heart conversation so we can throw it in the middle of the movie and people feel like they're getting, some quality family time moments.
Another scene that happens in every vacation movie, too.
Yeah.
Where he takes Russ aside and they have a man-to-man talk about...
That is Russ. That's Russ.
Yeah, that's Russ.
And the other son is definitely Audrey. I don't know why, but I'm right.
You're right. You are right. Notice there's only one son that he's trying to have father-son time with.
Right? Yeah, yeah, that was weird, too. Yeah, that's the other thing, too, is I don't know maybe it's how much of it ended up on the cutting room floor because they had to get some production thing of this has to be 90 minutes, and maybe they lost
maybe
the connective tissue. I just did like basic research on the film, but like didn't see anything about like, oh, you know, there was a whole plot line that was cut out of the film or anything like that. That's what makes it almost weird.
Yeah. It almost feels like John Hughes is so good at like, this was what Christmas was like when I was growing up, or this is what a road trip was like when I was growing up. And this was like, they're like, hey, do you think you can do like a cabin in the woods kind of like comedy? And he's like, we never did that, but like, yeah.
But that's the thing is that from what I was reading, like this was at least partially inspired by the fact that like growing up in the Chicago suburbs, they drive up to Wisconsin to spend summers. And
but
so
I bet you there's like only three or four scenes, because there's a few moments that are like pretty cool, but like the boat, the speedboat that they rented, I can't imagine John Hughes' family did that kind of stuff. I can see like the scary story around the campfire. It's just like this didn't ring as true the way a lot of his best work does.
Well, I think a lot of that is the inclusion of the Dan Aykroyd of it all. Mm-hmm. Like so much of it, so much of like the quotidian John Hughesian,
Hughesian,
like family dynamic comedy stuff gets not almost railroaded by the fact that like we have to have this other louder, bigger family involved, where like, you know, where in the Vacation movies, Clark Griswold just kind of gets in his own way most of the time. Like the comedy is completely driven by the fact that he, you know, consistently runs 100 miles an hour in the wrong direction.
Yeah.
In this movie, everything bad that happens to John Candy happens because his brother-in-law is an asshole.
Yeah.
Yes.
Or he's fat. One of the two.
Or it's like if you made a vacation movie where the only conflict was Cousin Eddie.
Yeah.
And everything else was fine, but like Cousin Eddie was just always torpedoing the scenario. And you're like, okay, Cousin Eddie's like an element that works well, but like there has to be that other sort of like curse on you for this. And instead, it's just like everything is direct. It would be a perfect vacation if it wasn't for Dan Aykroyd.
I mean, there is the initial through line of him trying to recreate this vacation that he had when he was a kid with his father, and trying to, you know, and struggling to conform everything under that, and then, you know, things falling by the wayside because that's how life is. But that isn't, it's there, but it's not addressed, and it's not done in a way that would make the audience really consider any of that sort of stuff as even a theme of the film.
Here's a thing I didn't know. John Hughes wrote the Vacation movies.
Huh.
Yeah.
Wait,
you didn't know that?
No, I didn't know that. I thought there might be a John Hughes connection of some kind, but the National Lampoon of it all was took precedence in my mind. But yeah, no, it always felt very, it did feel John Hughesian, but, and also they're all taking place in Chicago. I should have known.
Well,
I should have known. I'm a bad film lover.
Yeah.
He did
put
one
me in the penalty
in Christmas.
Box.
Did he do the other two?
He did Vacation, National Lampoon's Vacation. He did European Vacation, Christmas Vacation.
Did he do Vegas Vacation?
I don't think he did Vegas Vacation.
When was the last time you guys saw European Vacation? Because like that is wildly bad.
I've never seen that one.
I've seen it once. It's crazy how it's like the second one they made, and then they made Christmas Vacation afterwards, and it's just so weird. The only funny scene in the whole thing is like Clark is in a roundabout in London, like, and he just like doesn't, he's on the wrong side of the car and the wrong side of the road, and he doesn't know how to merge to the left to get out of the roundabout. And then like it's hours.
It just gets stuck there.
Then,
yeah.
Yes. And then like it turns from day to night and the family's asleep in the car and he's like completely cracked, just like giggling hysterically that he can't get left. And every time he makes the circle, he'll be like, look, kids, Big Ben, Parliament. Just YouTube that. The rest of the movie is complete hogwash.
Yeah.
This must have started off as a vacation script.
It's so similar.
It feels like it has
to have started off as a vacation script. And I also was not able to do any real research. I'm looking at the Wikipedia page now, and I keep looking for the thing that happens in, you know, like every Die Hard movie after Die Hard and every Lethal Weapon movie after Lethal Weapon, where it's like yeah. they had this script floating around and they just decided to make it a Lethal Weapon or a Die Hard. But this, yeah.
Was Chevy considered for the role of Chet?
I don't know. There's no background on the Wikipedia page about how they made it, which I know it's like.
If I'm going to put my tinfoil hat on, there's probably an element where they're like, okay, Vacation's successful, but we all hate working with Chevy Chase. How do we pivot right now?
That's actually, I can totally see that happening. Yeah.
That wouldn't.
And then this bombed, and then they probably saw the theater reaction and were like, oh shit, Chevy's the key. So they got him for Christmas. And they made it a regular Vacation. And then by the time this was a hit on home video, Christmas Vacation was like underway.
Well, and the other thing, I mean, it didn't necessarily bomb. It made $43 million on a $24 million budget. So like it did fine. It just, I probably didn't, you know, do the gangbusters that they were expecting it to do.
Yeah.
But when you have like John Candy and Dan Aykroyd in late 80s.
Yeah.
Like that feels.
At like the height of their power.
Think of how much cocaine. Yeah. Was spent during the course of this filming.
So I know that because I had a similar experience with my Uncle Roy and a story he used to tell about a family that went into the woods and was attacked by a band of escaped army psychiatric patients who'd been subjected to violent, hellish, torturous behavior modification experiments.
Yeah, no, and that's what the weird thing is. I don't know. It's like not any one thing is responsible for it not quite peaking,
gelling,
it is less than the sum of its parts in that I find myself remembering the individual scenes or vignettes or moments in the film very fondly, but as a whole, it's fine. Like it's a vibe, really, more than anything else.
Yeah, I mean, and that's again, I think that's why it works so much better on home video than it does in a theater, because this really is just like a put it on and just kind of experience movie more than like sit down and really watch it for the great moments.
This is also one of the ultimate examples of like you could reorder all of the scenes and the movie doesn't affect. You know what's Nothing one changes. Thing I noticed that's super weird is there's a lot of moments where it's like. Dan Aykroyd does something and then John Candy's like, that's it. Like he almost leaves at one point. He's packing his suitcase again. There's moments like that. Yeah. And then when they get to the low point where like they have the fight while it's raining outside and Dan Aykroyd leaves, the scene before that happens, nothing happens. There's no bad thing. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, nothing happens because the fight starts out of nowhere about the fire, and it's just the last straw of Dan Aykroyd poking at John Candy.
Let's see. But the problem is John Candy's at his wit's end, and the scene before that happens is the old 96ers scene.
Yes, the old 96ers scene.
Which is not one of the like John Candy gets fucked over scenes. John Candy orders that on his own.
John Candy's a hero in that scene, but he accidentally fucks over his own son in the process.
Yes, he does.
A little bit, yeah. But that's of all the moments to put before the I've had it scene where we're at the end of the second act, that's not the one you put there.
No. Yeah. If any, like the
ski,
one, yeah.
The ski, yeah, something. I don't know. A million, like so many other moments.
Yeah. I think that's what it's like. I don't know whether it's a failure of editing that sort of keeps it from.
I don't know.
It like I said, I think it's multiple things for some reason. Just there's like the right or well, in this case, the wrong misfires at the wrong time just created this weird thing that. Again, it's just more of a vibe than a film.
Yeah.
But it's I still like. Again, speaking of the old 96er film, I still find it funny. It's stupid, but when he blows the hair off of the bear's ass in the end, I still cackle.
Long-time listeners of any of our pods will know that there are occasional moments where I break.
Yeah, yeah.
Or I will start laughing, and then the laughter will.
Well,
cascade.
If we're talking about the ass moment, it's you cracked.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I cracked. Yeah, where the laughter cascades and I can't stop laughing and I hurt myself.
Yeah,
That moment happened. I was watching it on my phone, lost complete physical control of my body and fell on the floor laughing. And I don't know what it is about
it's
that particular scene, the way those elements are together, the like 90s dad's ass joke of it all. The number of times I have been compared to a bear. It's just, it was one of those things where everything comes together just perfectly to crack me wide open.
It's a scene that my parents would rewind and rewatch.
Yeah, I remember my dad laughing at that. My dad never laughs at anything in movies.
And also the particular absurdity of the shotgun lamp that Robert Prowski plugs into the wall before he shoots.
I want to talk about that. That's my favorite joke in the movie, and you'll never ever laugh at it. But the fact that he runs over to the outlet and plugs it in, I couldn't get past. It's like, who thought of plugging it in? It's funny enough that it's a lamp. Like, it is, you can hilarious. Just shoot it. But like the fact that he goes over and like finds the outlet, and it's like a 2-foot cord, so like you have to shoot the gun near the wall.
But like it's those little gems that I think make the movie so memorable for me. Is like it's like that stuff, and like the stupid shit with the raccoons, and just like little moments like that.
The stuff with the raccoons is genius. You leave the raccoons out of this.
I mean, I'm wearing.
I got one thing to say about the raccoons, because I watched this on like a free streaming site that did not, for some reason, include raccoon subtitles. So which is such a more fun way to watch it, because it's these little interludes where you're just like, I don't know why we're cutting to this five times in the movie. The same piece of music every time, and just the sounds and the shots as if they are talking. It was great. I've seen it a million times, so I know what they say, but like that was a great way to watch.
I mean, another moment that cracked me was when they were eating the hot dogs, and one of the raccoons says, you know what these are made out of? And the other one says, lips and assholes, with an exclamation point. As if it was a good thing. I thought the raccoon stuff was fantastic. Actually, some of the best stuff in the movie.
Did you see the last raccoon scene, Connor?
I didn't make it. I'll admit, I watched this. I finished the movie shortly before we started this.
Oh, same.
I didn't.
I found out about that today, that there's a scene at the end of the credits. With the raccoons.
Oh, I didn't see that. I once the dancing stopped in the credits, I turned the movie off.
Yeah, I'd never. Who thinks to look at the end of the credits in an 80s movie?
Yeah,
it's not a Marvel movie. Well, to tell you that
they have one in Ferris Bueller. I wonder how that common is. I wonder how common that is in John Hughes movies.
Oh, now I gotta go back and watch.
It's a good
Home
question.
Alone.
The one in Ferris Bueller is genius.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
What is the raccoon scene at the end of this movie? Because I didn't see it either.
It's just they're just talking, and I think they mention ask why the bear is like upset, but they call the bear like Jody or something. They like name the bear has a name, and they're like, yeah, he got shot in the ass. Like, it's just them talking about what happened in the end of the movie.
He's missing the hair on his head and his ass.
Yep.
Yeah, it's like bald at both ends.
Yes, bald. Yeah. They do the bald. God,
I gotta say, my personal favorite character of the whole movie is Robert Prosky as Wally.
Yes.
Oh, his introduction where he's wearing the shirt that says I've been to Duluth.
Yes.
and the dog. So what's wrong with your dog?
Porcupine quills. Loves porcupines, hates people. She's in heat too. Too bad you're not a dog. Like,
that to me was the funniest line of the whole movie.
I lose it at when he's like, "Wow, you could get the shits from the well water." Yes.
Well, and the fucking birthday for the 100-and-whatever-it-was-year-old man.
Oh, yes.
Oh.
Yeah.
He died in the car on the way over. I wonder if this was originally written to be raunchier, and they had to pare it back. I wonder if...
If this was supposed to be a little bit more Animal House than...
I wonder if part of the reason that we feel like there's connective tissue missing is literally they had to cut stuff out to get the rating that they're going for. I mean, this was 88.
Yeah.
Did PG-13 exist at this point?
Yeah, must have.
Because that was Temple of Doom, right? Was PG-13 the first
one? Yeah, but Temple of Doom wasn't PG-13. Was this the movie where they got the conversation going? Yeah. I don't know what the first PG-13 movie was, but...
I think it was Red Dawn, which I don't know when that happened. And
that's cool.
Red Dawn, I think, was like 84. We're living through it. But yeah, so...
Red Dawn, 84, yeah.
Yeah.
I think, though, I think you're right, Connor, but I think it changed before it even started in production. I think they did a rewrite to either make it less raunchy or more raunchy from what it was, and found this weird middle area where it's just not quite where it should end up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's honestly, it's not bad. It just needs, it needs something it's going towards. Yeah. It needs the like father son fishing tournament or some stupid thing.
Oh, that would be like, great. That would
yeah,
be great.
It like yeah. that. Yeah, like the games or whatever to close out the season or
whatever.
Like, well,
yeah,
it's like
anything.
Both Dan Aykroyd. Like it's revealed a lot earlier that Dan Aykroyd is actually a fraud, and yes. then you know he's trying to like connect with his kids, and you know John Candy's trying to connect with his kids, and they decide to have like a dad off. And it turns out to be a fishing competition.
Yeah.
And then they both fall asleep and get leeches all over themselves anyway.
Okay. Can we talk about the fishing scene that is the whole thing is 80-yard?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, what did they film? Did they just film them waking up with leeches and then we're like, oh shit, this doesn't make any sense? Like, what happened?
There must have been
something
a whole other scene in there. My guess is that okay. If I had to guess, this is based on no evidence whatsoever. This is just what, like my understanding of how movies worked in the 80s.
You want to borrow my Chevy Chase tinfoil hat for this?
I'll bet a beginning scene was the boys are out fishing during the day, so like not like first thing in the morning. Dan Aykroyd pulls out a beer because you're fishing, it's beer time. Convinces John Candy to have one and says, "Well, let's let these boys are becoming men. Why don't you guys have a beer with the old men?" And then they wind up getting plastered, passing out, and then they wake up in the shore covered in leeches.
Yeah, and then somebody at the MPAA was like, "Nope."
Yeah,
and for some reason
they couldn't. Do that.
Or it's so early that it's just sort of a nodding off compilation where they're trying to like keep each other awake and it's just all of them together just like...
Well, I think the joke is that they woke up so early they fell asleep in the leeches.
But yeah.
Peter's is probably what happened, but Connor's is a better scene.
Correct.
I'll say that of those two.
That's how it usually goes.
That's...
Thanks, Pete. Do-do-do-do-do.
I mean, I still love this.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's the thing. We automatically jump on the flaws of every movie we've talked about so far in this series, but they're all movies that we love.
Mm-hmm.
So, so Matt, what made you? I'm curious. What brought this to mind to bring to the group?
I think it was a movie that I hadn't seen in a very long time that I remembered fondly and was a distinctive change in tone from the other movies that we had covered so far.
Yeah. We did pick a few bummers there up at the top.
So, like, that was the major impetus, and, like, Katie hadn't seen it, so I was like, all right, well, I can show you Great Outdoors, and because I had never made the Wisconsin connection before, so I was like, I wonder what you would think of this anyway. It was shot in California, but whatever. And so, like, that was the original thing of just, like, I wonder how well this holds up or not.
It was my connection to Wisconsin through your wife's family that made the teenage girl that hates people from Illinois ring very true.
Yeah.
The first time I was there, they spent a lot of time bad-mouthing people from Illinois.
The moment that
she's such a jerk in this movie.
I mean, if you were a local who had a seasonal job and had to deal with all the fibs, like, I would probably
but you have to be mean, and then what's with the, like, they're immediately boyfriend girlfriend, and then she's also like, don't ditch me, but like, we haven't actually, like, what is going on?
And they're
going
to break up immediately because he's going away. Yeah, it's all,
I know,
superfluous.
I just every time it cuts, it's the same like 90 second music track, and the scene lasts the whole track.
Yeah, Store Brand Police,
the regular movie. And it's just like, no one interacts with that. It's literally like they went off and filmed with that kid.
Yeah.
And did all these scenes where it's like, there's so many moments like that where it's like so many characters don't actually interact. Where there's towards the end when the mom and the blonde and Rusty are being attacked by the bear and they're like behind the kitchen island. I was like, have they had a scene together? Have they met?
Yeah. Do they know each other?
Do they know each other? There's so many characters that don't interact at all.
One thing I did like about the way this movie started was that at the beginning, during the opening credits, which is, for the record, about a minute too long, when they're all singing in the car and they seem to enjoy each other's company.
Yeah.
That is not a thing that many family movies do. And when I say family movies, I mean movies about families.
Certainly, they don't start from there. They start with a broken family that has to be repaired, but they seem like pretty legit all the way up.
Or they start with a family that's like kind of annoyed at each other generally, just because writing snotty kids is way more entertaining than writing not snotty kids.
Yeah.
Or you start with the family that acts like they're already happy, but they're not capital T, capital H, true happy. And then like the antics of the movie unlock how they really should feel. So like that's how you do this, where it's like the shittiness of Uncle Roman ends up creating what we need out of these people, where it's like they almost do that, where it's like everyone kind of loves Dan Aykroyd and you're like, okay, everyone but John Candy's going to like him. He's going to get jealous, but like he is a dick all the time. And then
I
everyone hates him.
I genuinely love
time.
when the kids are like, yeah, Uncle Roman's an asshole.
Oh, yeah.
We get it.
Blow it
we
out
understand
your ass.
Uncle Roman's an asshole. Like, we're not going to say no to a boat ride on a cool fucking boat, but Uncle Roman's a dick.
Suck my wake.
Yeah, also, the water skiing scene also went on for like a minute too long.
Yes.
There was a lot of the stunt actor portraying John Candy just like...
Yeah, it gave me lots of time to think about this, the saucer sled scene in... Christmas Vacation, which is like
this was a wet run for that.
It really is. It totally is like warming up to write the Christmas Vacation script. I also wonder how much the Dan Aykroyd of it all being involved kind of changes the dynamic of this movie, because he's playing that character like John Candy's playing his character pretty straight.
Yeah,
you know, like just like a normal nice guy. Dan Aykroyd's coming in with this, with a very affected kind of like I'm a rich guy from the 80s thing going on.
Specifically, a rich guy from Chicago, because he's laying the Chicago accent on thick.
Yeah.
I actually know somebody who reminds me a hell of a lot of the guy that Dan Aykroyd is playing, who I work with, who is also a colossal dick, but wants you to know just how rich and successful he is.
Peter, say his name and then we'll bleep it. Just do it.
Which is a dick name anyway, so, you know.
Yeah, and Dan Aykroyd, I mean, for a guy from Canada, really, he carried that Chicago accent throughout the rest of his life. He still sounds like that guy.
Oh, yeah.
To this day. I love a Chicago accent.
I think he's great in this. I think he's fucking amazing. He steals the movie. But, like, yeah, like what they do with his character is not what you need. Like... The character stuff is pretty good. The plot stuff is weak.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, especially unloading that whole, like, I'm broke and trying to take advantage of you.
You can't. Yeah. You can't have it where it's like.
The beginning, at the middle of the third act was.
And he, for it to happen the way it does, and for him to reveal it as a plot twist that it's not a real thing. Like, we just learned about the Sure Thing in the scene earlier, and now you're telling me that Sure Thing is not, like, you need to have it be like he pulls his wife aside at the beginning. He's like, look, I like the first time he's a dick to John Candy, the wife pulls him aside. It's like, listen, we're on vacation with them, this is their place. And he's like, look, I know, but I trust me, at the end of this vacation he's gonna be really happy. I have this investment that I'm gonna offer him. You need to say all of that early on. Instead, there's this like very subtle hints, and this one scene where he's trying to like swindle a priest into the thing. But like, yeah, it's just so poorly, the information is so poorly dispersed where it's just all backloaded.
Yeah, that's what's at a loss, is that the in-between stuff to get us, like the setting up for any of the payoffs that happen late in the movie. Like even the setup of just how Dan Aykroyd interacts with his kids is kind of just spun up pretty much in the very end when they run away and fall down the well.
His creepy kids.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. They drop the creepy kid thing a little bit too early for me too.
Yeah. I
mean, that could have been a running joke throughout the entire film that would have made me laugh every time they did it.
But they never really anything with it either. Like, they do the Twilight Zone thing very early on, and then like they're weird because they're just staring the whole time, but they'd never do anything. They never highlight the creepiness again really to that level.
Yeah. They could have been a lot
metaphor
weirder.
For the misstep of this, where it's like, okay, you got these creepy kids and they're doing the Twilight Zone thing, but the creepy twins is a Shining thing.
Yeah.
It's not a Twilight Zone thing. What are you doing? Why are you putting the Twilight Zone music?
I mean, it's hard to pick out a great music sting from the Shining. Oh, that's instantly.
I can play four notes right now.
You could do the electric organ Dies Irae bit.
Yeah,
that's all you do every time. I bet you. I will put this on social media. I will recut one of the scenes with them. And I'll put that music in there. I might have to put it in slow motion to really like, because they push in too fast. Yeah. That music. I think it would be real much more creepy. And that's what you do. And you have those kids. They don't have a payoff for being weird. And then also there's the, did anyone read online that the whole bear plot was a kind of a reshoot?
Yeah.
Kind of like a mid-production thing. And you really notice it with, like, there's that one scene that stood out to me because pretty much the whole movie is, like, on location. I was really looking for, like, sets. But one really obvious set was when, I don't know what Dan Aykroyd's doing. He's just, like, hanging out on the side of the house. And Wally comes over with the twins and he's like, the kids are playing near the mine.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. And you're like, why is this lit like we're in an airplane hangar? Like, what is happening?
Also just a bizarre like scene because, again, that's a thing where just nothing happens.
Yeah, it's all tell, no show.
There are like four scenes that they need to do to set up the finale, and every single one of them is neither entertaining nor funny. It's just like this weird exposition dump and you're like... Okay.
The only one is John Candy telling the original bear story.
Yes.
That's the only one, which is great.
Yeah.
And also, I want to know whatever the hell he was actually supposed to be drinking that causes a fireball to shoot up. Like, was he drinking just pure gasoline?
That was that 80s cartoon physics, where it's like you watch any 80s movie, even any 80s comedy, nothing behaves in like the physics of reality.
Yeah.
It's so, we watched Weekend at Bernie's recently, which... What a delight. An amazing... Holy shit. That movie's incredible. But like, yeah, there's constantly the weirdest like slapstick cartoon, like Looney Tunes effects.
Yeah. And they went through all the effort to have it shoot up the chimney too in the outside shot too. Which was,
that shot really makes that scene. It's like the wide from across the lake.
God.
You know, it's like, it's one of those... What I do appreciate about comedies from this era is like, if you can, why not? You know, like, it doesn't make any sense, but fuck it. Sure. You know, there's a certain amount of that. And I keep on going back to Christmas Vacation. That's because that's a movie that I've seen dozens of times. And this is like the first time I think I've watched Great Outdoors from beginning to end in one sitting. Mm. Like I've seen scenes of Great Outdoors a lot because it was just on, you know, rotation back in the day. I definitely seen the bear scene a couple of times.
This was my first time seeing it at all.
Yeah.
I had seen none of it. Yeah.
Didn't talk about that. We should have asked. I assumed we had all grown up with this.
No, not I. I completely missed this one.
That's also what I love about movies from this era is like some people literally grew up with it. Like it was like on heavy rotation in the family. Yeah. People, it was always on. And for some people like this was not a family. This was not a movie that was on rotation in my family at all. Yeah. My sister has a weird obsession with Cool Runnings, another John Candy movie.
Yeah, because it was always on.
She can quote you that chapter and verse, which is... Mm-hmm. We should actually have her on to talk about Cool Runnings at some point.
I would love that.
Would be fun.
Yeah, man.
I don't know if you can do that anymore.
I was going to say, here's the stop there.
Yeah.
We have to bleep that, too.
Yeah, you know? I mean, just in a very 90s like thing, she did go dressed up like a Jamaican guy for Halloween once.
Yeah.
No makeup was involved.
Okay,
can we talk about John Candy?
Yeah.
Yes.
John Candy was stolen from us way too fucking early.
Yeah. Sure was.
I hate that about the world we live in. We should have more. We should have had more John Candy. We should still have John Candy to this day.
Along,
if you haven't... Go down the YouTube rabbit hole of John. All of the old like Letterman Carson appearances are on YouTube. Every one of them. Mm-hmm. Just search for the John Candy ones. They're a delight to see him just like hanging out on a late night show.
Did you meet Miss Minnie Kinski?
Yes.
Have you ever worked with Nastasia?
Well, we did a Vogue shoot this afternoon.
Well, I look forward to that. Very nice.
It'll be out, I think, in the summer.
Uh-huh, yeah. She's nice.
All the animals we used in this one. Gosh, I tell you.
I gotta say, in the tradition of overweight comedians that like took themselves and their profession very seriously, we probably got him for 10 years longer than we should have. because Belushi dead at 33 and Farley dead at 33.
Yeah.
Candy lived to 43. Good so,
Lord. Yeah.
Well, I mean, like, he wasn't doing nearly as many hard drugs as those guys were. I mean,
right. Yeah. No, that helped a lot.
Yeah. Speedball.
But still more than the average adult today. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's like so many things. When you're into the opiates, that's usually what does you in.
Yeah.
And can you imagine, like, we're all early to mid 30s. Like, can you imagine doing drugs? Like, yeah. Dude, I swear to God, at the movie the other night, I got Sour Patch Kids and I felt sick.
Yeah. Like, also, but that's the thing is, like, I'm 33. I would be dead.
Right.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Now can you imagine works. Cocaine? Yeah.
Yeah, like I've never done coke, but people have offered me coke before. But and I'm like, if somebody offered me coke now, I'd be like, what are you, 12?
Yeah.
Like,
no, that's yeah.
Do you have any idea what that's going to do to my sleep schedule?
Yeah.
A couple weeks ago, I like was about to go for a run, and I took like a pre-workout drink. And then something came up at like that I couldn't go for the run, so I just drank pre-workout without going for a run, and I was like, why do I feel like I'm going to explode out my lung? Like, goddamn, the 80s people ran themselves ragged. Yeah.
It's actually surprising how many of them are still alive.
Yeah.
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 I mean
Aykroyd survived Blues Brothers and is still alive.
Seriously. Yeah. I mean, he definitely was not as big of a drug guy as well, he was, but...
The crystal head vodka purifies your body. So.
Yeah. That's a good point, Frank.
What did I say, crystal head?
Yeah.
Is it crystal?
That's what it was before you do all the drugs, and then the skull is left.
Well, I mean, what's everybody else's... I mean, what's about everybody else's relationship with John Candy's work? Because John Candy really passed away... I mean, he was 94 when he passed away, so I was not even 10.
Yeah.
But, you know, he was in this. He was Uncle Buck. He was in
Home Alone.
Sure. He was one of the guys. He was one of those guys. I mean, he was never a Saturday Night Live guy, but he was definitely sort of like in the circle of like SNL people as well.
By the time I was old enough to know who he was dead. Like, I don't remember learning he died. I was like 6. So he's always been like, to me, it feels like he died before I was born.
Yeah.
But yeah, as far as like the movies go, I don't know. Great Outdoors and Uncle Buck were probably the two I knew the most. And then later, and Home Alone, but that, I always forget he's in that. And then later was like Planes, Trains, and Cool Runnings. Yeah, yeah.
My first was Home Alone, followed very quickly by Spaceballs.
Oh, fuck. I forgot.
Oh, shit. Spaceballs.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
That's a movie I haven't thought about in a long time.
Yeah. That's the same year as this.
No shit. Really?
No, year before, 87.
But it feels so much
Spaceballs
older.
Spaceballs 87, okay.
Weirdly enough.
It feels way older. That feels like a movie from the 70s.
Yeah.
But
yeah. I guess
that may also be
intentional.
What they were going
well,
for.
Well, it's spoofing a movie from 10 years earlier. Yeah. Like, I know it's Star Wars still, so you can do it whenever, but like, that is crazy.
Wait, it's spoofing Star Wars?
I felt a great disturbance in the Force, as if millions of voices suddenly cried out in terror and were suddenly silenced.
I fucking love John Candy. He to me was one of those people, kind of like you, Frank, where when I was old enough to figure out like who he was, and I was like, where is more of this guy? And I found out he was dead. It was like a little mini devastation. It was like, what the fuck do you mean he's dead?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's like 35 forever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I guess my experience I actually really always remember his bit in Home Alone, but Home Alone, this, because this was the one of the few ones we owned, and then Spaceballs probably, because we had that one on repeat all of the time.
Yeah. Oh, the announcer and Rookie of the Year as well.
Oh, shit.
Oh, yeah.
God,
he's perfectly cast in that.
He did pop in a couple. Yeah, he had a couple of weird ones. We should try to find the worst John Candy movie. There's a few other ones he made. Did anyone see the one where it's like, it's basically Great Outdoors at like a beach resort?
No.
I don't know there's no other person in it. It's right around the same time. It's probably earlier than this. And the only thing I remember is that he's like, his like nemesis in it is like the rich. It's basically the bad guy from like Caddyshack.
It's
kind
called
of thing.
Summer Rental. It was a 1985 American comedy film directed by Carl Reiner, starring John Candy.
Oh God. And it's not great, but it has a big like sail, like a regatta race at the end of it is like the big finale.
Scored by Alan Silvestri.
Oh God. It's Alan Silvestri in the '80s.
Yes.
Doing his like Romancing the Stone jazz.
I mean, what? Even so, like I said, with all the failings, there's still parts of it that I very much enjoy. I think looking back on it as an adult, this is part of what made me want to ever even think about having a cabin in the woods.
Yeah.
The idea of, you know, just being out in the woods near a lake or whatever, but having a fire going in the fireplace and like the kind of what I was talking about before of the movie is kind of a vibe of the vibe that the movie creates still works and resonates with me. And I think that it does inform some of what I enjoy about just like some of my own life choices of, you know, where I choose to spend my recreational time.
It's so nice. I like it.
That's the thing. It's a pleasant, it's not a good movie. It's not a great movie. It's a pleasant movie.
Yes.
Is this the best non-vacation movie, like off-brand? Like I would say it's either this or Money Pit would be the other one I would maybe consider in that category of like the everything goes wrong kind of.
I mean, of the ones that anybody would remember, probably.
Yeah, I mean, of that era. I mean, I'm sure there have been riffs
Funny
on
Farm
this since
is another
then.
One. Summer Rental. I think Summer Rental is the same format too.
I'm sure there's been riffs on that since then that I like just don't know because they were made sort of after I was the audience for that.
Yeah.
I think there was a rumor at one point that they were going to remake this with Kevin Hart.
Yeah.
A few years ago.
There's also a rumor that on the Wikipedia it said that Dan Aykroyd is trying to write a sequel.
Of course he is.
That brings back his character as like a failed Ponzi scheme guy.
Somebody needs to stop Dan Aykroyd.
He's going to be in one scene of the Kevin Hart rock version. Like.
Honestly, Dan Aykroyd should play the campground guy.
Yeah.
They should remake Great Outdoors twice with both with The Rock and Kevin Hart, and then each of them take turns playing the like Candy Aykroyd role, and we just see as a society which one we prefer.
So you want it to be a Jumanji 3 like side quill?
It's the greatest cinematic experiment since they remade Psycho shot for shot.
God. Is The Rock also just like the CGI bear?
Oh God!
I mean, you won't.
You put two of his heads together. It looks like the.
I was going to say you won't need a butt prosthetic for him.
Here's the thing about this movie that I love: the way John Candy interacts with bears.
Yes.
the scene where they go to the bear dump.
Oh yeah.
Which I didn't know was a thing until this movie, and I googled mm-hmm. I googled that. Apparently, there was one in Yellowstone for a long
Holy
time, and they called
shit.
It like. They called it the bear's lunch counter, and like they had a sign and everything until they realized that was a terrible thing to do and closed in the 70s.
Yep.
But when he's like kind of like trying to negotiate with the bears when they're on his car, like, okay, I'm going to go now.
I'm going to move now. I'm moving now.
All right. I'll just drive out. He'll jump right off.
And then when the bear in the cabin, when the bear is on top of the door, which is on top of John Candy, and he's bouncing, and John Candy just keeps on calling him an asshole, like he cut him off in traffic.
Well, then he goes, uncle, uncle, uncle.
Yeah.
Dude, that, and then a moment later, one of my favorite gags is like Dan Aykroyd is like moves forward to be heroic with the bear, and the bear stands up on his hind legs, and Dan, it just cuts to Dan Aykroyd with like the most Looney Tunes mouth open expression you've ever seen. It's so over the top that it actually like passes by the part of the joke that's funny and comes back around.
There is some weirdness with the camera work because some people might know about the trivia of it, like where after the old 96er and he throws up, you can still see Dan Aykroyd doing the 3-2-1 count for everybody to run away.
Yes. Yes, I saw that.
Like that,
I missed
that.
I did miss that.
On camera, and no, everybody was like, yeah, it's fine.
We're not going to do it again.
I totally missed that, but I, again, was watching.
There's a lot of weird edits in this. It's the whole thing is just like, it doesn't make sense how this kind of got put together, yeah. And these are the scenes. It also is just like, it's also missing any like heart scenes. They throw in the like the one with the rowboat.
Yeah, that's like, what we're, yeah.
There's no scene. I keep thinking of the scene in Christmas Vacation where, like, yeah, all hell's broken loose and we're pretty late into the movie, but like he's reading The Night Before Christmas to the family, and it's like, I don't know, 45 seconds of like a pretty nice little moment, like to take a break. It's just like every scene is like John Candy wants to do something one way, Dan Aykroyd takes it too far, and John Candy's the only one to suffer for it.
Or even
every
the scene,
single scene.
The scene in Christmas Vacation where he gets trapped in the attic and he's watching the old
movies.
Oh,
yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, yes.
Yeah.
That is such an important narrative scene that is also the funniest scene in the movie, where it's like, I understand everything about, I understand more about Clark Griswold from that scene than the entirety of National Lampoon's Vacation 1.
Yes.
Was like, I see what he's after. There's not a single word spoken. I get the music is just nailing it. And like, I get why he's so desperate for all of this. And you don't get that with anything in this.
Yeah. I think
they try it with the, Here, have my ring.
Yeah, bit,
but and honestly, if we hadn't lost them drinking beer in the boat scene, I think it would have worked better. Honestly, because like it was like, you know, my dad took me out on the boat and gave me my first beer, and
he
you're
needs,
the same age.
Yeah. There needed to be a 2-minute scene where John Candy's like by himself looking at a picture of him and his dad in his wallet, you know, and his wife comes up and is like,
yes.
You know, are you looking forward to it? And he's like, yeah, you know, I just really hope that me and Buck have the same type of relationship that me and my dad had or something like that. That's all you need.
And you know what it is? You have some late in the movie line where he mentions that, like, they're not very obvious with it, but we're like, oh shit, it's been 2 weeks since the funeral. You're like, oh fuck.
Yeah.
Like, oh, I get it.
Yeah, that would bring it around.
That's why we're here.
Yeah.
That's why this is, yeah, that's why everything's happening.
Yep.
Or they go to the cabin that they went to initially for their honeymoon.
Yeah. It should be the same cabin.
Yeah.
Yes.
Or it should have been like, oh, that cat, we had to abandon that cabin. It was just falling apart. And like, it's in the woods if you know, but, and then yes. They go see it and it was his dad. It was like, it was his parents' cabin that he took his wife on their honeymoon. I think
his uncle's cabin,
his uncle's or something, but like there could be family memories in there that he could find and
like
the
stumble
old
on. Yeah.
Yeah.
The family cabin, yeah. Whatever. Yeah. Oh God, every episode we do starts as a give it five and turns into a fix a four.
It's almost like that's what we designed the show to be, Frank.
But I mean, Matt, I gotta say thank you because I have not thought about this movie in a very long time, and it was just like perfect for it's starting to get nice out. Like,
no, it was a great choice, man. Yeah. I appreciate it.
I think I will buy a VHS copy of it to have upstate to plug into the CRT for just like a
that's
random
a good call.
Night
yeah.
And just have. And I think that that's
you absolutely should do that. You should do that.
That's his perfect spot, I think.
Then we should come to the cabin and record an episode together.
Yes, absolutely.
In the cabin.
I got one last question. Do you think any struggling actor ever has used in their audition the monologue Dan Aykroyd has talking about the resources of the Northwest?
You know what I see out there? A paper mill and toxic waste and
all safely contained,
yeah.
Sunken and sealed in the bottom of the lake.
That is actually a great. That is a really funny, satire. Like
that'd be great.
That is delivered really, really well by Dan Aykroyd.
Yeah.
It's like totally from a different movie, but I think he does an amazing job with
it. Yeah. Did you notice that they're drinking out of those collectible Star Wars glasses during that scene?
No.
Like
no.
The famous ones?
That's
which
funny.
Is such a like a cabin in the or summer home thing of like you have all like the Burger King glasses as your glassware.
Yep.
Like that's the thing. Little touches like that are what make it what keep it in my library.
Yeah. There's a few nice moments, little stuff like that. Is there anything else anyone wants to touch on before we
No, I covered it.
Before we head back to the city?
Yeah, right.
I think I've said all the pieces that are worth saying.
Yeah.
Okay, guys. Well, race you home.
Race me home.
We should totally do that whenever we accidentally fix a flick. Just do like the little sting from the end of the old show.
Yeah, you should.
Cut that out, Frank.
I'm editing this?
I don't know.
Damn it.
Not it.
I just had the most hardcore case of deja vu. My God.